We're at the thing. Welcome to the Labor Beat Radio program, broadcast on www.enlightenradio.org. You can also access our past podcasts at podcasts.enlightenradio.org, and we also have a player that's at player.enlightenradio.org. And this morning's broadcast is a continuation of a program that JB and I started 12, 13 years ago, so quite a while. And we want to welcome this morning my good friend Scott Marshall from the SOAR and the Retired Steelworkers, and a lefty friend of mine forever, from Chicago, and also Fuzz LaRue from the Plumbers and Pipefitters in West Virginia. He's retired, but he's spending a lot of time, he told me, on political education for the West Virginia labor movement. And so I want to welcome Fuzz here too. Probably I'm going to open by asking him to maybe introduce himself and whatever chief concerns he has. I will mention that the last, you know, labor leaders call in West Virginia, the president, Josh Sword, and he emphasized a lot of fairly large energy-related projects that are part of the Inflation Reduction Act that are coming to West Virginia in one form or another, maybe, or at least there's a hydrogen hub for which I believe we're a candidate or a possible winner in that contest. We have a battery plant, for electric cars that's been started, and then I've read about Bill Gates with the giant dollar sign over his head. I used to work for Microsoft. Visiting the state to try to convert one or more coal-fired plants into nuclear facilities. Anyway, it sounded like a lot of money coming in. Question is how many jobs and how much of that money will ever be distributed to the West Virginia working people. Fuzz, but you may have another thing on your mind, and if you do, that's fine too. But what's your take on the jobs and union situation here in West Virginia and the legislature? Go ahead, take it away.
One of the things I've seen, and I was a lobbyist for the building trades for quite a few years, there's been a war on the working people in West Virginia for quite a few years. Whether it's union or non-union. And they want to bring all this stuff into West Virginia. And right now, we don't have the people to demand it once it's built. Building it will be tough because there is a lot of projects going around the United States that will draw our competent craftspeople away from the state. You take over Columbus, they have a chip plant that's going to start at 20 billion. They've got roughly 1,500 acres right now. They're going up to 3,000 acres, they said. A battery plant. People are going to go to these areas when they get treated better and stay there. So we have to work within the state here. If you want to keep and retain the people that are quality, and I don't care if it's union or non-union, you've got to start treating them better and take care of them. And we've did a disservice to them, the teachers. We need an educated workforce out there, period, to take care of this stuff. And we're not following that. I think that, you know, Mitch Carmichael is the head of economic development, and he's going out there beating the bush for all this stuff. But he's also calling the steel workers for people. He's calling the building trades to see if we could build stuff, have the people. All of a sudden, they want us, but they haven't done anything to keep us. They've just done things to drive everybody away from the state. That's where I see one of the problems we have in our state is they have to change the philosophy down there and start taking care of the people. We have smart individuals here that could do all this stuff, but we just don't have people on top leading us the right way. Sometimes I feel when it comes to the bills they pass down there in the Senate and the House. But so, there is work. We have a battery plant supposed to start up in Weirton, right above the river from us. You know, Nucor's down there. I heard a battery plant towards your guys' area. So we have some things that are going to start. And what people realize, have got to realize, manufacturing nowadays is not like it was 40 years ago when things started to leave. You're not going to see plants with thousands of people there. If you have a manufacturing facility that has 200 to 300 people getting paid a living wage and healthcare and that stuff, you're doing really good. And this is what we have to start looking for, is those kind of places.
Let me ask you a little question about the hydrogen hub, because I got a long lecture on it day before yesterday from former state senator John Unger. And he indicated that if West Virginia qualified, and he thought we had a good chance based on the fact that the water resources in West Virginia were vast compared to some of the other competitors, and you know, the whole process of separating hydrogen from water and then using the hydrogen to fire the process would make it, one, cleaner, and two, he said, because it's not really an extractive process, you're actually generating power here, and then you're going to send power into a regional, some sort of regional network. And that distribution system, he argued, would be much more in terms of ongoing, not just building it, but ongoing jobs. Does that make any sense to you? Are you familiar?
Yeah, I've read some of it. I mean, I think the hydrogen hub, it's probably like these new nukes they have. They're small units. There's still, I think, a lot of design work needs to be done on them. Whoop.
Yeah.
And I'm being from the construction trade. I don't count on anything until we have people on the jobs. And some of this stuff, to me, is years down the road. Might be quite a while.
Right.
But I do think the hydrogen hub is a very plausible thing that will happen. We have power here that we just haven't tapped, and that's one of them. Right. And we'll get to it. It just takes time, and you got to have people, right leadership too.
So if the what would be? I mean, here in the education situation you mentioned, like for example, in Jefferson County here, we're surrounded I don't know about Pennsylvania, but certainly Maryland and Washington County, Maryland, and Loudoun County, Virginia are paying salaries ranging between $10,000 and $15,000 a year higher than we're able to pay in the Eastern Panhandle, okay? And that's caused a tremendous drain of qualified teachers, especially those with master's degrees, okay? Just go across the river and do significantly better, but we had a state rep here, a state delegate, John Doyle, for a number of years. I think both he and
John,
you know, were tried to get an adjustment, you know, like a housing adjustment to reflect differences in what it costs to live here. But and they had some success, but fundamentally the situation is still the same. And there's a high percentage of substitute teachers, many of whom are not necessarily qualified in the subject they're being asked to teach because they can't find somebody else. And that's very frustrating both for them, I think, and for the teachers too. What kind of regime would fix this? Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, some people say the fact that all whole state has to be the same rates all across to the state makes it so you can't differentiate based on area, and that some people say, well, that wouldn't really raise it, the whole thing. You know, you could play off counties against each other, and it would be as destructive as constructive. So, do you have any, what are your thoughts on where to go with this?
Well, the differential pay, I understand that in the construction trade, we've got about five or six plumbers and pipefitter unions in West Virginia. In Eastern Panhandle there, I'm pretty sure they're covered by the Baltimore local. Their scale is higher than what we have here in Wheeling. It's all relative to where you're at. So I understand differential pay is to where you live. One of the problems you have here, another problem you have in Eastern Panhandle is everybody, I'd say 90% of the people work in D.C. I don't know if that's correct, but my son worked over there in Inwood for a year. And we go over to visit, and everybody in his neighborhood, they get on the train early in the morning and don't get back till 7 o'clock at night. So no one even knows each other in the neighborhoods over there.
Right.
That's one of the problems you have. One of the problems to attack the problem with education and all problems we have in this state is we have a part-time legislative body. We're there for 60 days trying to fix all the problems in 60 days, and you're not going to do it. And you've seen all the fighting they do on stupid bills instead of sitting down. I mean, over in Ohio and in Pennsylvania, it's full-time legislative bodies. I followed Ohio a lot. They'll get a bill, and that bill will be in committee 6 or 8 months before they bring it to the floor so they can go through it and make sure it's going to be a good bill. That's one of the problems we have. We try to fix things on the fly in this state, and it doesn't work. We need to put more money into the education system, and we just haven't done it yet. I mean, the people in my trades, when we get kids out of high school, we want them to be good in math, good in computer skills,
right,
able to communicate, but we're not seeing that. Excuse me. So when you're working on problems, just compare it to our Democratic Party in the state.
Yeah.
It's in bad shape. But where do you have to start? You got to start at the bottom, the young people. And that's the same way with educated people. You've got to start out at kindergarten to get these kids educated for the future. And we're just not doing it the best we should. One of the big problems, as for the money going in, Jim Justice and all them people keep touting how much surplus we have. Well, then let's put the surplus where we need it, not give tax breaks.
Well, I have never yet met an honest to God Republican that didn't love doesn't want to cut their taxes. Scott, you got some comment? Yeah, questions? Go ahead.
I'm going to ask a question. I've been seeing. Well, I saw this story about an auto plant in Japan that was from the parts to coming off the assembly line. It's all done by robots, never touched by human hands. And I think that's the future. And what I'm wondering is, in terms of the building trades, my understanding here is that one of the things that people are really calling out, wanting to train people for, is robot care, because that's going to be the next thing that's going on the assembly line. So I'm wondering what you think about that, and have you heard anything like that?
We already have robotic welding. It doesn't work everywhere, but these places where you have enough room, you set up a machine. And I don't know if you're familiar with welding, but it used to be in the old days, you'd put a root pass in, filler, and a cap.
Yeah.
These machines do it all with one pass.
Yeah.
But it's a robotic, it's controlled by a computer. The fitter or welder is watching the screen. And a lot of it has to do with setup. First you get that thing set up, Mm-hmm. And then you just turn it on and you sit there and watch it. When it's done, it's a perfect weld. You take the machine off and you move to the next joint you have to weld. We do have robotics to that extent there. We're not going to have robotics, I think, for quite a while that can climb steel, bolt steel together, go down in ditches, fix pipes and stuff like that. It's still going to be the hands and backs of human beings doing it, whether it's men or women.
Thank God for that.
Another sort of economic development. Now, there's many... West Virginia, let's assume half these projects that Josh was talking about or that Senator Manchin is claiming to bring into the state, let's assume that they work and they generate, as in the past, like the coal industry, the natural gas industry, they generate tremendous, tremendous wealth, okay? The amount of energy that the state has exported or that have been produced here, they have this situation where we have a lot of wealth, but it's not, somehow it doesn't stay in the state. The coal companies are owned mostly out of state, or the natural gas thing is external investments. Somehow the money that could be used to fund big, you know, a big advance in educational quality or other public, you know, related goods, just doesn't seem to happen. And I've heard that in the past called the curse of natural resources, where a lot of countries, with a few exceptions, have found that if they have a lot of wealth in the state, that some group with the most guns and butter, or most guns and money, comes in and takes it and then turns it into, you know, almost a semi-criminal enterprise by the time it's done. But, you know, there's exceptions. I always think of Norway, who set up these big sovereign wealth funds, right, and figured out a way to turn the oil into one of the highest educational standards in the world, okay? So it's not impossible, but there seems to be a big structural issue here that we need to overcome if we're going to get Jim Justice's surpluses and other surpluses to come. Down to the people somehow. How do we do that?
you got to realize this is not a government of the people. This is a government of the funds of a few. We have, you know, there's been a couple states that put together future funds, like West Virginia Tribe, but we did not fund them. And these states have billions of dollars they're sitting on it. They invest, and then they can dole it out when they're allowed to. We have been a corporate colony for 150 years. It's an extraction state. Timber, oil, and gas. Back in the 1890s, the little town of Sistersville had the most millionaires in the United States because of oil. Ooh. That was in the 1890s. Wow. And then it disappears, and we're back into oil and gas, which is at a deeper level in the structure. We can't be afraid to tax these people and get our fair share. When the natural gas at Marcellus play started up here years ago, had an elected official was bending over backwards. I said, you don't need to do that. He said, well, if we don't do it, they'll leave. I said, so what? They can't take the gas with them. They got to drill it here and get it here. That's true. We've got it. We're sitting on it. You tax them. And don't be afraid. They're making, you look through the finances for the last 4 years, corporations have made billions of dollars. Energy companies, billions of dollars. It's always that way. But for some reason, West Virginia, we're always poor and we're always the last person to get anything. So we need to have some officials that have backbone and aren't afraid to stand up to these kind of people is the main thing. And there's a few down there, but there's not near enough.
Right.
And until we get the right ones elected, and the way their state is right now, far right, you're not going to see any difference, I don't think, for a while. I think that we're going to be a poor state, and we don't have to be. We've been sitting on, we ought to be one of the richest states in the country with all the stuff that's been extracted here, but we're not.
Right. Scott, yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering, in the labor movement, is there talk, is there work towards developing union people to run for office to start getting some of this done?
There is. We've had a few step up to the plate, but whether it's union or non-union or anybody, you got to think, do you want to put your family through this? I mean, anymore, running for, look at the money they spend on Senate races in this state.
Right.
I mean, state Senate races. I'm not even talking about mansion, yeah. Federal. The money we spend in this state on Senate, House of Delegate races is unbelievable for a job that pays $22,000 a year. And it's part-time. You still have to have another job to survive. But it's all about buying something.
Mm-hmm. When was the last time that the idea of a full-time legislature was floated? Everybody just rejected because it's going to cost too much money, so-called? Or what's any discussion on that issue?
I don't think there's ever been any discussion on that issue. Yeah, okay. I mean, there's been people talk about, like May said, you know, I see what happens in Ohio, Pennsylvania. Is it perfect? No. I mean, Ohio's got term limits, and these people have seemed to find a way to get around term limits, too. You know, so it's like you've got good and bad with everything. But I think, you know, we're past the stage. We need a full-time legislative body to take these problems on. The correctional systems, which is in big trouble right now in the state, education system, our roads. I mean, we're last in everything anymore. Yeah, hell, we're behind Puerto Rico most of the time and stuff in their territory.
That's
so
right.
We need to work on this stuff full time.
Let me ask. Let me ask about community colleges and the apprentice programs and the trades. They seem to be following different tracks a lot of times, and yet you would think that there ought to be a way to integrate them. Like for example, all these computer and automation related skills, right? Whether it's fixing robots or all the, you know, just you know, being able to handle the new equipment and the new technologies. I heard the other day, for example, that the biggest victim of the new chatbots, you know, the artificial intelligence chatbot, is going to be educated people, right? Because a lot of a technical job, your physician's assistant, like that can, the chatbots are going to get to the point where they can do, you know, about, you know, some large percentage of that kind of work. And but the idea of shaping our education system toward the work that needs to be done. My understanding, we have Blue Ridge Community College, but do we have any others really to lift people up from, or do we have to improve high school? What do we do to at least get our workers closer to what needs to be done?
We, right now, we have a fairly good relationship with our community colleges up here when it comes to trades. You can go through there and get an associate degree with your hours in the trade, some extra classes at the school. What it takes is you have to, our apprentice coordinator for every craft, they go out and talk to the high school counselors and their tech ed people saying, hey, this is what we got. we have programs where we go to the schools and show these kids. Up here in Wheeling, the building trades for the last 8 years or more have been running the Wheeling Park skating rink for a day. It's covered, and they have an apprentice day there, and all the schools from all over bust their kids in, the kids that want to see about apprenticeships, and we show them. They get to see hands-on what running a little crane is or what a welding is. We have virtual welders. We let them do that. So, you know, we show them everything. So we're starting to make inroads. Back in the early 80s, I think a lot of the high schools went, everybody had to go to college. No one didn't have to work with their hands. Used to, we had some Votech schools up here before that. And the men and women, mainly men at the time, they went there and learned how to weld, auto repair, this, electronics, this and that. But a lot of that disappeared when capitalism took over and moved all our factories from here to various other places for cheap labor and environmental rules.
Yeah.
That we didn't need all these people now. And now, like the Infrastructure Act and the IRA Act.
Yeah.
We got like 50 factories that are wanting to start to build in the United States for the first time in a year, over 50. But, you know, we got to go back to the educating the people to get in there, you know,
that's right.
Whether it's to work the factory or to build the factory.
Right.
And we're changing back. And it's not going to happen overnight. And you've got to, and sometimes, to me, there's a political thing. Yeah, the white collar versus the blue collar. The white collar's got the money to make these investments. Well, they've been making all these investments across the ocean. Now they're coming back and they're seeing what they did to themselves. I blame this all on capitalism. They brought it here. They wanted to change everything, and we lost all the workers. We lost worker morale,
mm-hmm.
ethics. Back in the early 80s and the 70s, you had people, men and women, get up to go to the job site every day through, whether it's the steel workers, construction trades, that their kids saw them go to work every day to work and everything. And since we've lost that, you don't have it. You have a generation now that doesn't know what it is to go to work every day. They're either on the phones or on their iPads or everything. And we're going to have to break that cycle too somehow, you know, teach people that, yeah, you're going to have to start working again to make this country good.
That's for sure.
If you don't make anything, you're not going to be anything.
I heard an expression from a federal worker, my wife in this case, yesterday, who says about arguing about contracting out, you know, all kinds of permanent jobs. And one person said, well, what you contract out, you will no longer know, which I thought was an interesting thing about, you know, how the resident workforce. And then consultants come in and, you know, that's what, when they say contracting out, you're hiring consultants, right? Not plumbers, mostly. So, but another question that occurred to me is that now I've heard at the, when we were at the legislative conference a couple months ago, a number of people talking about if they were going to run for office, they were going to run as independents. And I heard that a little bit from, you know, my friend, brother John Unger, too, few months ago, same kind of thing, and now I hear rumors that just a rumor, but that Senator Manchin is thinking about running for president as an independent. I think I heard that from Josh on the call last week. What is this? Could an independent candidacy succeed in West Virginia? Is the party structure set up so that it would be meaningless to step outside it in any way? Or How do you view that development and the number of people at the legislative conference that were saying that, well, if I want to run, I can't win as a Democrat. How do you think about that independence?
It's coming. I don't know when in this state. I'll tell you what I've gone through. I do the politics of my local, and basically I talk to the princes most of the time because you want to talk to the young minds. Last year we had 100 princes. 43 or 44 of them were independents. It's going in the same, and I've been keeping the stats for years now, for about 6 or 8 years. Seems like you still have the same amount of people percentage-wise going red, but it's the Democrats that they're losing the people, that the young people are going independent. Now, can I blame them after what they see, what goes on in D.C. and the way politics is? I cannot blame them for that. Do they vote? A lot of them show up and vote. They have been voting in the general. I'm trying to get our primary voting better, but the general, we're doing pretty good. But I see the young people. If you want to get in, that's the future, is the young people. And if you want to do politics for the state, you better see what those people want. I mean, I ask them what their issues are. Their issues are a lot of what Bernie Sanders has been talking about.
Yeah.
Universal health care. They have spouses that have educational loans. The price of pharmaceuticals. This is what there are young people that are looking at this stuff. My princes are anywhere from 19 to 40 years old. So there's the future right there. Yep. This is, to me, one reason why a lot of people are going independent, who want to run. But as for an independent candidate to run for governor, a third party, I don't think we have enough yet.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we won't get there, but it won't be this election cycle for sure.
What do you think, JB?
Yeah, I agree with Fuzz on that. But I hope, you know, people are getting registered. I hope people are not getting completely dissatisfied with the system. You know, what happened in Tennessee with so many, what do they call it, supermajority Republicans, we have it here. We have the same thing here. And in Tennessee, there was another phenomena that happened that we have here, is races that are not contested. There are many positions that are not even contested. So half of the Tennessee legislature didn't even have to run for office. They got an automatic ticket when they signed up for the primary. These are things that we have to address, and that's what the labor movement is trying to do by recruiting candidates. I agree with Fuzz. I mean, I don't want to run for office, but the pressure's there. The pressure's, oh, well, you know, you can speak. You're not afraid to talk to in the public, and you can do this and you can do that. You know what you're doing. You know, you'd be great for it. But that's not the final decision. You know, just because you have the qualifications doesn't mean you have to run for the office. A lot of us like our privacy. You know, when you're a public figure, they're calling you all the time, asking your opinion on stuff. You know, you may not want to be, you may not want to talk to the media. So there's a lot of people like me. And I think Fuzz is the same way. We like to work behind the scenes. You know, we like to call these people and tell, you know, give them our what to do about, you know, whatever the issue happens to be at the time. We had a project here, where they wanted to put in 350 KOA RV sites in a public park, in a state park. And that was just ridiculous. It was just such a ridiculous idea. And it was, you know, it was hatched by our good friend, our good friend in the Commerce Department, Mitch, our buddy Mitch, Fuzz
Carmichael.
Yeah, he worked on it for 3 years with Daryl Coles and all these guys behind the scenes, you know, trying to figure out how to bring people into West Virginia. Of course, you got to be pretty wealthy to be able to buy an RV and pay for the gas just to get it from point A to point B. So, you know, we looked at it as a giveaway. You know, it's like we're going to take public land and give it to these private, you know, rich people driving these RVs, you know. And luckily, I can pick up the phone and call Craig Blair, and he'll answer the phone, and I'll say, "Hey, Craig, you know, this is a terrible idea." And he'll go, "What are you talking about?" And I'll explain it to him, and he'll go, "I'm going to call the Secretary of Commerce right now and tell him we don't want this project off the record." You know, everything's off the record. So, I mean, they killed it. They killed it before there was even a hearing. But that's not the way we do politics. I agree with Fuzz. We need to have more deliberation when it comes to legislation so that we get it right, so that it's talked about, so that it's debated, and it's compromised to the point where it will actually work. And you don't see that in West Virginia, unfortunately.
Scott.
Yeah, I'm glad they've even mentioned Tennessee, because I do think it's also important to note the Tennessee Three, as they're becoming called now. You got a lot of young people who are getting involved in politics, and you saw what they did. They really, and I think they're really inspiring a lot of people. They're being asked to speak at things all over the country now, the two young men. And I do think a lot of people are looking in that direction. So I really think that they're, and, you know, we got to support that. We got to help develop that. We got to find young workers who, you know, who want to run for office and who are interested in it. Even when it's so expensive, there's still ways that people organize in those situations. And, you know, and again, you don't have to start by running for state senate. You can run, you got people, you can run for city council. You got people that can run for school boards and stuff like that. And again, I see in Chicago evidence that that's picking up. That's it.
I think part of the problem is you have to figure out what you're going to do. I mean, in other words, you have to be a little bit scientific about picking, you know, what you're going to try and fix, because I see a lot of young people that have very, very idealistic, and they want to change the world, and that's good. I remember that. There's the actual hard work of putting together the kind of coalition. And the other thing that's really important is I remember from, you know, San Jose days when I was out there, is that if you can put together 25 people that have some organizing skills, okay, and you have a message that at least is connecting to a principal concern, you can turn over certainly an entire county. Okay, I mean, you can make a big difference, but having that, you got to have a collective approach. You've got to have a team approach. You got to have people that are prepared to, when they get hit, come back. You know, correct mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, and you got that business of maintaining a collective organization of some kind or a team that can, kick ass on moving stuff. And people will respond if you can do that. If you're just an individual and you go, well, who'll donate money so I can run a conventional campaign? I don't know about those kind of efforts seem to falter. Nice people. We had a wonderful person, Hannah Geffert, from our area up here. The sweetheart. Yeah, I mean, a good person. You know, she went putting together the kind of organization that would make a dent. You know, that seemed to be beyond the vision there. And so,
but John, also with those Tennessee guys, remember what they got in trouble for. They had a purpose. They knew what they were trying to do.
Right.
And now they're inspiring other people to have those kinds of purposes. And that brings people together collectively, too.
It does. Well, we're at, I think we're at the point where we need to we've got a long enough podcast, my friends, because people don't listen to long podcasts. And we have a reasonably short one. I want to thank Buzz for, let us on inside, some of the inside stories of the work he's been doing for a long time here and he continues to do here in West Virginia to activate our political action in the labor movement. It's a critical thing. I don't think there's any other force in the state, maybe in the country, maybe in the world, that can be the kind of force that could unite an overwhelming majority of people to make the changes that we need to make. And so I want to thank Buzz for making this contribution today. Anybody else got a sign off they want to do? Extra message? Good and welfare?
I want to correct one thing you said early, John, about Form Energy, the battery plant. That is for utility storage, utility scale storage. It has nothing to do with electric cars.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a new technology that's never been tested. It's, you know, we gave what, $300 million to that Buzz or Fuzz?
I think close to it.
Yes, around $300 million. According to reports now filtering in, some of that money was siphoned off from somewhere else. So I don't think we had to pay all of it, but they took the opportunity to invest in the future of energy, which is storage. You know, we all know it's storage is a big proponent, a big component of that. And, it showed that they were thinking of the future. But then they want to make us pay for a coal plant in Ohio that, you know, that should be retired and charge all the ratepayers in West Virginia $30 a year to keep it open for 1 year. I mean, it's ridiculous. So we have good and bad in West Virginia. Hopefully the good will outweigh the bad someday and people will start coming here again. I mean, right now people are leaving. You know, there's more deaths than there are births, and people are leaving for greener pastures. But all those folks leaving California, you know, they got to come somewhere. And if we can attract them to move here, that'll be better for the state.
Well, we got water. That's one thing California is having a problem with. All right, Scott, you got your last word?
Well, just one thing that I always say is, you know, what a crime it is that the resources we have, we can't give people medical care. We can't give people jobs. We can't solve poverty for people. It's just a crime, and it's time. And more young people are beginning to say that. So maybe we're headed in the right direction.
I hope so. All right, everybody. This is www.enlightenradio.org, and you can reach us we're playing almost 24/7. We have live shows running 7 or 7:30 in the morning on 5 days a week. Tomorrow is going to be Recovery Radio tomorrow is going to be the Poetry Show with my good friend Janet Harrison. And Thursday is going to be Recovery Radio with James Boyd. And Friday we do the Shepherdstown Show with Karen Valentine. So I'm just delighted that you guys have showed up today, and I'll just leave with my customary message here. It's late, but everything comes next. Take care, everybody.